All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Options Discovery. Today, we are joined by Callie Cox at eToro. So, Callie, how about you just start off, introduce yourself, and run us through your educational and career background. How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, Alex. I'm so pumped to be here. Options were actually my first love, completely by accident. Even though I focus more on stocks and bonds these days, more traditional capital markets. So basically, I backdoored my way into finance, Alex. I actually went to journalism school for college. I went
nice.
To UNC. Yeah. UNC, go Heels. Didn't realize or didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew I could write and I kind of like numbers. But I didn't know how I put that together. I was lucky or fortunate enough to get an internship at Bloomberg as a news intern, and then lucky enough to get hired as a full-time reporter. And the thing that Bloomberg does when they hire somebody straight out of college is they make them go through a rotational program where they basically sit on different desks for a few months at each time just to help you realize where your passion really is or where you'd actually want to work. They want to be able to match you up with something, a topic that fits your skills best. So I rotated on the corporate finance desk first, bonds. I was like, ew, don't love this. I went to the stock market desk, loved it. Loved the energy around the stock market, loved the familiarity with it because everybody watches the stock market, even if they don't fully understand it. But then I wanted a full-time job and the only position they had was the options reporter. And I was like, great, I know nothing about it, but I want to be on the stock market team. So I'll take it. So it's kind of a weird way into it, but basically what I did at Bloomberg for 2 years, a little longer than that, was I wrote this daily options column on differences in implied volatilities. I finally learned what a put was, what a call was. I had so many good mentors along the way from within the industry and within Bloomberg. And I started basically writing research through that daily options column. It got really popular. I met a lot of really awesome people. And I realized that I wanted to move into research full time because I was writing research, but I was still a journalist. It was a little bit different. So I got a chance to move to Tab Group. It's a market structure firm. I don't think it exists any longer, but Larry Tab is actually at Bloomberg now. So funny how that comes full circle. But I worked at Tab Group. We did a lot of options market structure consulting for a bunch of bigger banks, asset managers, exchanges. I wrote reports on how to trade options, what to consider when you're trading certain products. It was very niche and very nerdy, but I loved it. But then I moved to North Carolina, had to get out of the options focus because I was down in North Carolina, and I actually moved on from Tab Group once I moved down to Raleigh. So I had a few years working in the corporate treasury of a bank. It was actually the bank that bought SVB, it's First Citizens. So I was in their corporate treasury for a bit, wanted to get back into research. And that's basically at the phase of my career that I'm in now. I joined LPL Financial, was a senior analyst on their team, and then moved on to Ally, a big bank with a brokerage. And then my boss's boss at Ally stole me to go to eToro. And quite honestly, I'm in the most fun role of my career right now. I'm helping build a thought leadership product for eToro, meaning that I basically talk about markets and get paid for it. We focus on stocks, options, and crypto, but we're also a social trading platform. So I get to, you know, focus on investors that are more like me, that, you know, want a community of people like them to be able to talk about, you know, stocks and options and trades and what exactly is going on. So it's a really roundabout way to say I'm not your traditional finance person, and I certainly was not your traditional options person, but here I am talking about options.
Well, it's really interesting that you say that, because it just goes to show we've had a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds on this show. And it's just wherever your path kind of starts, a lot of the times you end up doing something that you just never thought of or something that you had an interest in. And you could really come from anywhere and land in this industry, which is always really cool to see. And it's really cool to hear your story. So with that being said, today we're going to be talking about options, of course, and more specifically, options and earnings. So the first question I have for you would just be, obviously earnings season is kind of around the corner. We've had some of the big tech earnings in the past couple of weeks. And just what are some of the most important things to watch out for when trading options around such a big event like earnings?
Yeah, wow, that's a loaded question. So I approach everything as I do. I put my analyst hat on, and then I think about the trading strategy of it when I, you know, put options in the mix. So whenever I answer questions, I might start with like the analyst stuff and then get into the nitty gritty a little bit more, just giving you a little window into how I think about this. So earnings season is really interesting right now. I'm sure you've read about it, but earnings haven't exactly been stellar lately. However, the market has rallied and we've seen a lot of positive reactions to earnings just because expectations, i.e. Wall Street estimates, have been so low. We've been so pessimistic going into earnings season, and that makes a really low bar for stocks to beat, and they end up beating it. Many stocks end up beating it. A higher percentage of stocks have been beating estimates. So as an options trader, you're going in, you're trying to trade around an earnings report. I think you first have to consider expectations because, you know, in markets, the takeaway is really in the eye of the beholder. So you have to think about the perception of what's going to happen versus what actually happens. And then you have to think about the option side of it too, of course. Well, I'll actually back up. So putting the analyst cap back on, you have to know about your company, the company whose options you're going to trade around earnings. That seems obvious, but I feel like a lot of traders go into trading an event, trading an analyst day, trading earnings, and they don't realize the nuances of the company. You know, what the company talks about after earnings come out, commentary, very important. You know, what the company specializes in, what the products are, you know, what the hotspots are for certain companies. And then they get surprised. They put a trade on and then the trade moves against them. And it's because of some like niche product or, you know, niche issue that only really focused investors can pick up on. So, you know, I think all options traders should understand the nuances of the companies they're trading. Again, that seems obvious, but I don't think a lot of people do it. But getting into the options too, you know, I think you really have to consider what options you have within your options, you know, what expirations you can trade, what strike prices you can trade, how precise you can get with this earnings trade that you're putting on. And obviously, how easy is it to put that trade on? You know, what's the liquidity in the contracts that you're trading? You know, again, you know, if there are a lot of strikes on a certain stock, then there may not be a lot of volume in certain strikes. So that's another thing to consider too, because the efficiency of trading and liquidity of, you know, putting on a trade is, I would argue, just as important as making the correct trade. So there are a lot of things to consider, and I don't want to overwhelm anybody. But I almost think of it as like a basic checklist. It's like, know the stock and then know the trade you want to put on. And, you know, just think about the most efficient way to put it on.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think it's a great way to break it down in an actionable way where now we have a view on the stock. We know the company relatively well, and now we're going to put on a trade based upon expressing that view. One of the things I'm interested in is obviously there's now the next layer of nuance when it comes to choosing what options you want to trade to express that view. And so when looking at those options, maybe let's say we have a long view going into an earnings announcement, what are some of those key indicators that we want to look for when trading those options to make sure that we're trading the right options?
Yeah, for sure. And I want to go back to something you said, Alex, just then about understanding your view and then actually executing on that view. Again, it seems so simple. You're like, of course, I have an opinion on a stock. Like, I'm going to express it through options. But it really, in action, isn't as simple. And I feel like traders don't understand what it means to take their view and really put it down on paper and execute it. So the more you can practice at it, the more you'll get to it. But I think it really boils down to, you know, what's your view? When do you think it will happen? And what contracts really satisfy that view? And then with earnings, you can get a little more specific, like I just did. But, you know, as a zooming it out, you know, or just to zoom it out, you know, with options traders wanting to make a speculative position, I think those are the three main questions you have to go through. So indicators. Key indicators, yep, when it comes to earnings. I have a few. I'm kind of a market historian. I've made my name by digging through historical data, like crazy amounts of it. And I think that there are a few things that you can focus on. Of course, there are a bunch of different indicators you can look at, but I really like looking at past earnings reactions. There's not an easy way to find it. You probably dig it up on Yahoo Finance. And if you dig up stock data, you can always get to it yourself. But I think it's important to really understand how the stock moves around earnings, because certain stocks, there are, you know, certain really interesting patterns about how often they beat sales, how often they beat earnings estimates. When they do beat, how does the stock move? So just getting a lay of the land there, I think, is really, really important, because again, you know, it's all about expectations, and different kinds of investors have different expectations, and different kinds of investors invest in different stocks. So you can get a feel for that when you look at the past earnings reactions. So to take that a step further, you could also look at the past moves and applied volatility around earnings and around, you know, the day after earnings. You know, how does implied volatility move? Because that's essentially what we're trading on here. You know, does implied volatility drop? Does it pick back up? When does it drop? Does it drop the day after? If you want to get really, really precise, you know, when does it drop after earnings are released versus, you know, the earnings call, and what exactly is, you know, changing, what exactly is affecting the implied volatility whenever earnings come out? Is it the actual result, or is it the commentary after the fact? Do you have, you know, a really colorful C-suite who comes on the earnings call and, you know, says a lot of things, and then investors change their mind? So again, really, really hard to dig through, but if you have the patience and ability to do it, I think looking at historical moves and implied volatility can teach you a lot. I really like looking at open interest. Everybody talks about volume, and I think volumes are really important, but you can't tell intent by volume, because you never know what that trade or that volume entails. I call it emotion, not direction, when we're talking about volume and put call ratios. You can see that there's a lot of speculation happening, but you can't really tell direction. Well, if you look at options volume and then you look at open interest relative to that volume, you can finally get a sense of direction. So to understand the stock that you're trading more, or the options on the stock that you're trading more, you can look at open interest, you can look at volume, you can look at implied vols lately. You can understand how the stock has moved outside of earnings. I think those are all really important metrics to understand, and not ones that you have to know like the back of your hand before you trade, but some that could, you know, give you some of that edge before you put on that trade before earnings.
Yeah. And it's really interesting that you mentioned that. Actually, my next question kind of goes into that implied volatility. Now, as a market historian, I'm curious to see what you've seen from analyzing all of this data when it comes to those expansions or contractions in implied volatility. So typically after an earnings announcement, do we usually see either or expansion or contraction in implied volatility? And what are some maybe strategies that we could deploy in order to take advantage of those moves in implied volatility that might be directionally neutral?
Yeah, well, Alex, I think it's really hard to have a blanket statement about all types of stocks, because I think they all move differently. Your Tesla is not the same as your utility stock. The options trading on them are quite different as well. I do look at S&P implied vol relative to, you know, major macro event days. When I say major macro events, I mean Fed, CPI, and jobs days, which aren't earnings days, I know, but it is an event reaction, and you do typically see implied vols drop after that. Again, S&P is not a stock. Fed, CPI, jobs days are not earnings. But if I had to hazard a guess, I would say in most situations, you would see implied vols drop off quite a bit after earnings, because earnings are a scheduled event. You know, traders know about that. They're preparing their options trades for that event, or, you know, hedging before that event. And they're likely, with all the strikes and with all the expirations we have these days, they're likely to pull it off pretty soon after earnings come out. But again, very, very blanket statement. One thing I want to add with that, though, is that with implied volatilities, I think you also have to understand what's driving the move in them, because you have two types of risk. You have systematic risk, that's risk that moves the entire market, and then you have unsystematic risk, which is risk that moves your one stock. and earnings or company specific news is on systematic risk. But I think traders often overlook the impact of systemic or systematic risk as well. And both of those things can move implied volatilities. You know, both of those risks are reasons why people trade options. And they trade options in different ways, but, you know, within a single stock, investors are taking both of those risks into consideration. So basically, I think you have to understand what moves your stock, you know, why it moves as much as it does, and what events have spurred changes in implied volatility in the past. We're getting nerdy.
That's what we're all about, right? No, but I think that's really interesting that you talk about that. And I guess one thing that maybe we haven't said yet, but I guess should be added to the checklist is that overall macro view, right? Because sometimes we have seen earnings reports that might beat analyst expectations, but then the stock drops. And so kind of looking at that, what are some other insights you can give us to incorporating the macro view into that checklist of how we're putting on the trade?
Yeah, so it's interesting you brought that up. I actually did a video with one of my colleagues. His name's Danny Vega. I know, Vega, what an appropriate last name. We joke about that all the time. But I did a video with him because one day he came to me and he was like, Callie, I have to understand this. Like, the stock just beat earnings. Why, or this company just beat earnings. Why is the stock down so much? And I was like, well, of course, it's all about expectations. And, you know, there could have been some bad management commentary on the back of really good earnings. But then I took a step back and I was like, wow, that's actually a pretty fundamental question that I'm sure a lot of people are asking. And again, it really has to do with expectations. And right now, you know, expectations have been low from Wall Street, but given the fact that markets are so, the S&P is, you know, near its 52-week highs, it's, you know, crypto is, you know, pushing up to multi-month highs as well. We're seeing a lot of sectors do impressively well in this environment. You know, in a way, expectations are kind of high because prices are high. So an interesting thing that we've seen in the past earnings season is that, you know, a lot of companies are beating earnings estimates, but the price reaction that we see after isn't as positive as it has been in past seasons. So basically, those companies that are beating estimates, their stock isn't popping as much. And I think that has to do with the environment right now and just how high prices are relative to uncertainty. So that's a really big black hole from where we were going, I think. But in terms of our macro view, I mean, right now we're short-term cautious. I'd say that we're a little more optimistic than the average firm because we think that a lot of bad news has been priced into the markets recently. But at the same time, with the S&P, we're up near 4,200, and we're still dealing with a lot of, you know, open questions right now. We have the debt ceiling, we have inflation that's slowing, but maybe not for much longer. We have job market data that's weakening. We now have banks thrown into the mix. So, you know, right now, from a macro stance, we've encouraged clients to, you know, consider what could happen in either scenario. Either the market keeps rallying or the market drops quickly. And the reason why we're so wishy-washy there is because, honestly, it could go either way. The pain trade is higher, but at the same time, it seems like conditions are getting really ripe for a recession right now. And if we hit a recession, chances are we're going to take out the lows in the S&P. So we really like a barbell strategy right now. We like staying defensive, having a plan if prices fall 5 to 10% from here, maybe even more, but at the same time, staying invested in quality risk. So you have that upside in case the market keeps rallying and you have exposure to companies that can weather a storm if we hit one.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. And I think it's a really awesome way, I love how you described it, to describe how you think when it comes to incorporating that macro view. And just from a top-down perspective, looking at it and saying, okay, taking a lot of the nuance into consideration and being able to figure out what an investor believes is that quality risk, and being able to be a little bit defensive there when it comes to maybe putting on some of those options trades, maybe hedging a little bit. Another thing I want to talk about as well is, you know, some of the other Greeks that maybe we should look at when trading these options going into earnings. What are some other Greek indicators to look at, maybe some levels or some ratios that we should look at, maybe with gamma or delta or theta, or I guess these days even rho. So what is your thoughts there?
Yeah, wow, we're getting into some really interesting stuff. Okay, so talking about the Greeks, so the one that is probably most common for options traders, the one that many are familiar with, is delta, right? It's the change in the options price relative to the stock price, which is all about what options trading is about. That's what you're trying to capture when you're making a trade. Delta to me, I mean, of course, really important to watch if you're trading around an event, if you're trading around earnings, because it tells you if an options trade is actually going to pay off around earnings. Something to keep in mind, especially as you look at pricing in options and how much bang for your buck you can get there. Gamma, you know, is the second derivative of delta. It's the delta of delta. It's how much will the volatility in the options price change relative to the stock price. I'm going to be honest, gamma is talking out of my depth a little bit, but it does show you, you know, how much. So with delta, it shows how much bang for your buck you can get. With gamma, it's like showing how big of a firecracker you're going to get with
your acceleration.
How much it's going to surprise to the upside or downside. Obviously, it's important to pay attention to gamma. That's kind of like your expected versus unexpected moves within the options price. And then theta, I want to point out too, especially with the use of short dated options around, you know, event trading, earnings trading, because theta is your time premium. Theta is basically the premium that erodes as you get closer to expiration. And look, I love the innovation in short dated options. I think it's great that we have all these different types of products to trade around events. But I mean, the theta in a short dated option erodes so quickly. So I think you have to consider that when you're trying to get really precise with your trades, because of course we want to trade day of, but that also means that you have to be more attentive to your trade and you have to be more, more nimble and willing to, you know, take it off and put it on and be able to watch the stock's moves. So I think in general with the Greeks, they're a little underappreciated, but I also think that they're a little misunderstood. So narrowing down what you're watching and understanding what you're watching is especially important.
Yeah. And I think that's super interesting that you do mention theta in that way, because I know probably a lot of people watching this show and maybe a decent amount of the retail traders on eToro might have those account sizes below 25,000, which would subject them to the PDT rules. So having to take those trades, put them on and off within a single day might have them violate the rules on their account, which we've talked to with other guests before. And so you do have to be careful about that when you're looking at the option as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I also think people underestimate the time that it takes to put a trade on and actually monitor it and understand, you know, when to take it off or where to take it off. Because again, it goes back to the views. It's like people have views, but then when it gets into the nuance of the view and actually executing it, that's where they get lost. So, you know, I can think that, for example, Apple stock was going up after earnings, but, you know, how much will it go up? You know, where am I comfortable? To what price am I comfortable saying that? You know, how do I execute that through options? What expiration do I use? How does the price of that option move? There are so many variables that you have to consider.
And it's really interesting too. And I'm kind of segueing into the next part or the next question I have is hedging a long position. So let's say we have a long position in the stock going into earnings season. We're uncertain about the outcome. We want to make sure that we're maybe eliminating some of that downside risk that we have from that position. What are some strategies that we could use there to hedge that downside risk if we do have a large long position in stock?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm going to go back to the three questions on this one. When you have a view about a stock and you want to express it through options, you have to understand what the view is, when it'll happen, and what products you need to use to get there. And I think this is especially important because in this question, Alex, you're telling me, you know, I own a stock, I want to hedge it. And we're going into earnings, which is, you know, I'm assuming a short-term event in your perspective. So, you know, I think understanding those three questions is really important before you start getting into the nitty-gritty of it and, you know, how you're actually going to execute it. When you hedge, I do think you have to really set your targets well, understand your own targets. You know, why are you holding this stock and at what price are you uncomfortable holding it? Essentially, at what price would you sell? So if Apple goes into earnings and, somehow they you know make a flop in their either earnings results or their commentary. Let's say that like AirPod sales sucked or something, and Apple stock falls 10%. Maybe you're excited owning Apple at 200, but are you excited owning Apple at 180? I'm not really sure. That's something you have to ask yourself. So when you're going into hedge, that's essentially how you pick your strike price. You consider, you know, how you would feel at certain price points, what you can handle at certain price points, because of course your financial situation comes into play too. And then you execute that way. And I also think it's important to look at technicals as well. I'm not a technician. I'll like make that disclosure right now. I can't talk about head and shoulder patterns. I don't understand them. But technicals are really, really important in a market that is infused with so much uncertainty, even for single stocks too. And I know a lot of technicians have had a lot of really interesting opinions on the market lately, because the market keeps blowing through all these technical levels. And they've provided support, believe it or not, you know, over the past few months. So you can set your targets, but it is important when you're making short-term trades to at least consider the technicals, because they seem to be good drivers of stock prices, at least over days or weeks or so.
Wow. Yeah, that was a great breakdown. I really appreciate that. I think it's really interesting how you kind of use that analyst cap and put in perspective, hey, what are your targets and what do you feel like you can reasonably handle on the downside if you have this long position, and what are you actually looking to hedge against? I think intention is everything from a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about in this conversation. But yeah, that was really great. Appreciate it. I think now we're going to move on to part two of the interview, which we get to talk a little bit more about your firm or the firm that you work for, eToro, and the new options platform. So obviously you guys just launched a new options platform in October of last year. You know, maybe run through some of the features and things that you guys offer at eToro.
Yeah, for sure. So I know I've probably like put somebody's head in a blender with the stuff I've been talking about, because we've gotten really nerdy. But the beauty of eToro's options product right now, we actually acquired a brokerage called Gatsby last year, and then we rolled out our options platform, rebranded as eToro Options. And the beauty of the options platform we have here is that it's super, super simple. The UX, you know, the trading platform is super crisp. You don't have to go through all these gymnastics when thinking about how to express your views, because we make it so easy for you. You go onto the app, you pick the stock you want to trade, you stay where you think the stock will go, and then we have a set number of trades that you can make to basically express that view. Obviously, we have buying calls, buying puts, and then we have some spreads that you can execute on. But we walk you through it step by step so you understand exactly what trade you're putting on, because we believe that investors should understand the trades that they're making, and we want to help them do that. So eToro Options, it's been around since October. You know, it has the benefit too of everything else the eToro platform offers. We have a really good draft trading function. So if you just listen to our whole spiel about trading around earnings and you're like, I don't even know if I feel confident enough to make a trade around earnings, like I just feel so confused now. Luckily we have a draft trading platform where you can basically set up a trade, but instead of executing it, you can click draft trade and watch how that trade performs without actually putting the trade on. I think it's a really slick way to teach people, you know, how options move in real time, considering all these things that we went through, Alex. eToro has a lot of really good trading analytics as well. We have TradingView charts. We have all the analytics that come off of that. And then, of course, we have our community too. We have 32 million registered users on eToro, and we have asset pages for every single stock, and, you know, options on stocks you can trade, where people can post their trades. They say, I traded this, and you can understand in real time where people are looking and where the momentum is going. So, I mean, I could talk about this for days. I think we have a great platform, but I really do think we have something special in the option side of our platform, because it really does tailor itself to the beginner to intermediate investor.
Yeah. And I think that's really interesting what you just touched on. And a lot of, you know, eToro's been around for a little while now and the name's been out there, but a lot of you know, what I found you guys had was describing yourselves as that social investment network and having that really built into the DNA of what you guys do as a broker dealer. So can you talk about some of those social features as it relates to options and how users are using those and using them to inform their decisions or just learn more?
Yeah, sure. So I'll go back to the asset pages and where you can post your trades. So at the beginning of the conversation, I know we talked about the nuances of a stock. You have to understand the company of the options you're trading. Of course, that's like investing 101. We try to make that easy for you. We have an asset page with all the recent news of the stock, lots of charts, ESG data on, what your stock is focused on and, what the important products are. And then we also have this social feed where we have people to the side talking about what kind of trades they're making in the stock, if they're buying, if they're selling, if they're, looking at calls on the stock, if they're looking at puts on the stock, and why, what events that they're trading around. And it's really easy and simple to navigate. You're able to find other people in different communities as well. We have, for example, an Invest in Her community where it's a community for female investors. I've actually done some work with the female investing community and helping them, understand more around investing. And that's kind of where we offer our value add, Alex. I think that we come in really well and we just provide you with all the information and all the trading, all the assets that you could ever need to curate the kind of portfolio that would work for you. And, with the social trading aspects as well, we have this feature called Club, where, if you have a certain amount of equity, you're basically in the club and you have access to an account manager who you can talk to. That's another social aspect, about your portfolio, about the products that we offer. And that account manager can help connect the dots for you. And we even go so far as to organize events for our club members, so they can get together, have a happy hour, commiserate over, how tough of a year it's been in this bear market. So we take social seriously. We built our platform around, being social and meeting other investors like you are. And, we have a lot of really fun stuff ahead that we're going to roll out on the options front.
Awesome. Well, I'm happy to stay tuned. And one thing that's really interesting to me whenever I hear about the social aspect of your platform is one thing that screams out to me is mobile. So how big of a piece is mobile and the mobile application to that social network effect? I know more and more people are trading from their phones, and I'm just wondering how your customers are using that and what features you guys have that really enhance that mobile experience.
Yeah, well, we have a presence on mobile, of course. I think everybody does these days, and more of our customers are using mobile to trade. And I think that actually speaks to the revolution we're seeing inside the investing industry right now, how easy it is to place a trade and the pros and cons that you get around that too. I mean, obviously, in terms of accessibility, it's great that you or I can get onto a platform, open an account so quickly, going through the correct processes, of course. I'm not saying like we skip over that, but, going through the AML and KYC processes, opening an account, and then being able to place a trade almost instantly. That's been a really revolutionary thing for the everyday investor. But at the same time, I think it eliminates some speed bumps, some like mental speed bumps that can really do an investor good. And that's how you get to the point of, your friends and family making a trade and then saying, oh, wow. Why did I do that? I didn't even think. It's like going on Amazon and ordering, true story, I did this, ordering like a $50 dog hairbrush and then saying like, why did I do that? He doesn't even shed. but we've all kind of been there before.
Yeah, I know how I have.
So yeah, exactly. So we focus a lot on our user experience when it comes to mobile, and more of our customers are using mobile. But I think it's really important to highlight just the challenges the industry could face as it gets easier and easier to trade. Things become more accessible. You have more insight into data and information, and markets are moving faster than ever. But at the same time, you really have to check your emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really interesting. I think that would be on its own another very interesting topic for the show. But as we kind of go into this last portion of the interview, really just interested about, you know, some of your experiences and lessons that you've learned while working in the derivatives industry, or maybe we should rephrase it as maybe some advice that you'd give to somebody or to yourself if you were just getting started in the industry.
Ooh, that's such a good question. I am here in this position talking to you because I asked a lot of questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Be very, very curious, because I think that marks, I think curiosity marks a good trader. And remember your time frames, and remember that everybody is investing for their own goals, because that's good investing advice, but also because you have to remember that when you're talking to people and when they're expressing their views on the market as well. There are a lot of perma bulls and a lot of perma bears out there, but they all have different incentives. They all have different time frames. And when you don't consider that, it's really easy to get lost in the noise. So just be very curious, ask a lot of questions. Don't be afraid to test out your skills. Again, we have a really, really good draft trading product for that. I know other brokerages have good kind of portfolio practice tools. So there's a lot out there that you can do without actually trading, and it can make you feel like you are trading. So practice, you know, try to learn what you're trading, and then find a community. We all like to talk about money, but nobody ever talks about it. It's really weird. So the options world I've found is quite small and very warm and friendly. So yeah, reach out to other people who are interested in options, listen to the JLN Options podcast. Check out eToro's Options Insights. I write a weekly note and I focus on options here and there, but there should be more coming in that avenue.
Awesome. Well, appreciate the plug. And for our last question, and this one is always interesting to see what the thoughts of our guests are and what they want to learn more about, but what's another topic you think we should cover on the show or have another guest cover on the show?
Okay, I have two for you. So,
all right.
I love hearing everything and anything about the VIX. I was one of the first people to come out and talk about short-term options effect on the VIX and why the VIX hasn't spiked in this past bear market. So I can never get enough about that. And in that vein, trading volatility and how it's changed with the advent of short-term options. And then I'd love to hear more about global interest in US listed options. You know, we all know U.S. investors are trading U.S. options. That's a given. But who else around the world is trading it? You know, what are other brokerages doing to accommodate that? And then, I mean, we all saw that Robinhood is rolling out 24-hour stock trading, right?
Yeah.
Extended trading hours. Why is that happening? Like, what's the strategy behind that? And if options traders are going to, you know, hinge on to that, especially global options traders.
Wow. Those are some really good topics. And I think we should get some good guests to cover them, but really appreciate you coming on this show. It's a pleasure to speak with you and get your insights. And thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. That was fun.
All right. Well, hopefully we can talk to you later, but this is going to be the end of our interview for Options Discovery. So I'll see you later. If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, johnlothiannews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.